Hello and welcome to another week, another episode of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, brought to you by TornbySports.com. John English and the Germs guy and Alan Zog, Jedi, are your hosts. And we're here to talk about, well, we're here after a great win by the Utah Jazz. So first off tonight, we're going to talk about the Utah Jazz and the Minnesota Timberwolves game tonight. John, why don't you take us into it?
Yeah, we're in postcast time, really, because the game just got over about an hour ago. But if the Jazz could play Minnesota 82 times a year, then they would be the NBA champions.
This is true. They seem to have their number right now.
And it's a great sign. What's great about this win, even though it's just the Timberwolves have a lot of injuries. The Jazz went into this game with a lot of injuries. And it is still a road game, but that didn't really seem to matter. They handled them pretty easily.
They did. And there are a couple of stats that jump out to me when you mentioned the Jazz on the road. Tonight on the TV, I don't know if you saw the stat go up on back-to-backs. The Jazz are 0-4 on the first night, but they are 3-1 on the second night. I think that's what they were showing up on the.
Really? I don't think so, because.
Was I reading that wrong?
I think they're 0-4 on the second night of a back to back. And so with this win, now they're 1-4 on the second night of a back to back. Because remember the. I don't remember who they beat the night before, but they beat somebody, and then the next night they went into Charlotte and got killed.
Yes. And then what about the Clippers game? Was that the first night of a back-to-back? Yeah. So something's skewed about that stat. They put something up on the TV tonight, and it said something, and maybe I was reading it wrong.
Oh no, you're right. Because they. Yeah, I guess it would be their 0-4 on the first night of a back-to-back.
And 3-1 on the second night, that one loss being Charlotte.
Well, that's still wrong because they beat New York.
Yeah.
No, that was preseason. No, that was regular season.
That was the first night of a back-to-back because then they went, yeah, so that is wrong.
All right, let's go through the whole thing. First night of back-to-back, Houston, they lost. Next one was Detroit, they won. Next one was New York. They won. Next one was Golden State. They lost. What are we at now? 2-2?
Yeah.
Going to December against the Kings. I think they lost to the Kings.
Yes, they did.
They lost to the Kings. And then next was the Pelicans. They lost that one. Then there was Orlando. And I believe they beat Orlando that time. And then they lost to Charlotte the next night. And then you had the Clippers as a loss. I don't know what that stat was.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. It was a stat they threw up during the game tonight where they said they were 0-4 and then 3-1. And I'm not sure. I'd have to go back to the broadcast to see because I don't remember. But the Jazz are playing really well on the road right now. And you're right. They seem to have Minnesota's number. They've played them twice this week and they've beat them both times. Both games were actually fun to watch too.
Yeah, it's fun to watch them. I mean, it's fun to watch them against another young team because Minnesota has some entertaining players that you know are going to be good in the near future. I like watching Wiggins play. I like. I'm really interested in the progress Shabazz Muhammad's made. He seemed to be figuring things out more in his second year. So they have some talent.
Yeah, they do.
But they're just missing their key pieces. Zach LaVine's not supposed to be a starting point guard this year. He wasn't even a starting point guard in college. He came off the bench in college. So you can see his rookie struggles in both games. And that's great for Trey. Trey looks great when he goes up against Zach LaVine. Well, tonight, Wiggins had 20 points. You can tell that he's going to be a big star. Mo Williams had 20 points because he had to take the majority of minutes from Zach. They had some individual okay performances in that game, but as a team, they're just not ready to beat anybody.
No, they're not, and there was a lot of one-on-one play tonight too from them that I noticed, and I think even what was it, Matt Harpring. Heaven forbid he say anything of any worth during the broadcast, but Matt Harpring did say something about the one-on-one play during a portion. I think it was in the third quarter where the Jazz were just taking over and taking control, is that Minnesota was responding with a lot of single one-on-one ISO matchups, and it just wasn't working well for them. And that's easy to defend when you're going one-on-one.
Yeah, and the Jazz were able to have their guys go off. I mean, Minnesota was the worst team in the NBA in December. And Jazz, I mean, actually, there were large spans of the game where they were actually making Minnesota look like a good defensive team. But then in the second half, when they were able to stop Minnesota's run there, when the score was in the 70s, then they, you know, put the foot on the throat and took the game over and let it get way out of hand. And the score actually, it was 101-89 as the final score. It was actually, I think they were up by 18 late before they started letting all the scrubs come in and kind of close it out. But they woke up in the fourth quarter to really make sure they put it away.
Yeah, they did.
I was looking at this stat sheet, and I thought it might be a mistake at first. Trevor Booker had 15 rebounds.
Yeah, he was all over the boards tonight, especially underneath. It wasn't, not a lot of them were ones that were coming off long either. They were dropping down right in his lap underneath too. He got a lot of close ones.
He had 5 offensive boards, so it's showing a lot of hustle. So he had 15. Rudy Gobert had a career night. He had 13 points, 11 rebounds,
who's your
assist, a steal, and 6 blocks.
So who's your MVP of the night?
I'd say Gobert.
Okay. Would have thought the same thing.
Though, I mean, Gobert had a career night, but, you know, you can't complain about the night Trey Burke had.
He had
28 points, 6 boards, 6 assists. He had a steal, too, so...
Well, and you pointed to the fact that he seems to play well against LaVine. I mean, he's had now, what is that, 54 points in 2 games against the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't looked at this, but I bet if you looked at his stats versus Minnesota, or put it this way, versus teams where their starting point guard isn't able to start, I bet he has really good numbers versus all the ones who are supposed to start and do.
I would agree. So let's jump into Trey. You mentioned last night during the game, and last night I almost call an anomaly. I mean, not often that guys have career horrible nights like that. But it happens. But you mentioned during the game last night on Twitter, and then you mentioned again today, you've been doing a little research. In fact, you had a conversation with Ben Dowsa from Salt City Hoops today about it. You wanted to talk about Trey Burke tonight and some trends.
Well, I was doing some query searches, just trying to figure out how often it's happened that a second-year starting point guard has been this bad in their shooting. And the only other time I could find it was Frank Johnson with the 1982-83 Washington Bullets.
Frank who? And
exactly. Frank Johnson with the Washington Bullets. I mean, that team had Rick Mahorn and had a couple other people you might have heard of. But that was it. And I looked at his stats, and he was really bad for them offensively, except he was decent at assists and he was a good defensive player, apparently. So that's how he was able to start. And so then I kind of played with it a little more, made it a little looser, and said, all right, let me just look at guys who in their first 3 years, they're shooting less than 30% from three. That let's put their efficient field goal percentage at 44 or less. See what I come up with. And The other comparison that came up was Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson, the second year, he was a bad three-point shooter. His two-point shooting was best. He was at 44%. He was 29% from three. But he contributed in so many other ways. His win share was 7.2. Trey is 0.2. Allen had a lot of assists. He had a ton of steals. He was averaging 2.3 steals that year. He got to the line. He had 10 free throw attempts a game. And Trey isn't even averaging two a game. And so as I compare his weaknesses to other weaknesses of other guards, I can see that their strengths were that much better. So then I kind of took a broader look at, like, okay, his shooting's really bad, but if we look at the overall balance of his game, how is he comparing to other guards in the league, other guys during their second year? And I was looking at a couple ones that kind of stuck out to me. I looked at Brandon Knight. I looked at Sebastian Telfair. And I look at Michael Carter-Williams, and those guys are actually comparable to Trey and what they're doing and how they do it. Some other suggestions I got were Kyle Lowry and Goran Dragic, but they didn't start for the majority of their second year, so I kind of set those aside. I'm trying to look at guys who started in their second year and how it went for them. And, you know, that's kind of about where he is. He is at about... in that Brandon Knight, Sebastian Telfair area for his second year.
It's interesting too. I mean, you mentioned Michael Carter-Williams and then you mentioned Brandon Knight. This kind of goes along with our discussion last week when we talked about redrafting the 2013 draft. And we even went over the draft that Brandon Knight was in. They're almost comparable to each other where there wasn't as many. I mean, other than Kyrie Irving, what about, point guards? We haven't had that many good point guards from a couple of those drafts, have we?
Not really. I mean, I'm looking at guards from Trey's draft and kind of the ones that stand out. There aren't many. It's Trey, it's Michael Carter-Williams. Victor Oladipo plays point a lot of the time, although it looks like he's going to be majority shooting guard now that they have Elfrid Payton. Shane Larkin came out, Dennis Schroeder came out, Nate Walters was a second rounder who's had some good games, but...
And none of those names really grab out. I mean, if you're on that whole list you just put... Trey and Michael Carter-Williams might be the best two players in that point guard list.
Yeah. Ben had pointed out a tweet from, now I can't remember who it was from, PPP Basketball or something like that.
Yeah, I saw that.
Talked about the worst five starting point guards in the NBA this year.
Yeah.
And he said, two-year comparison. And I threw them up. I plugged in the numbers, and yeah, Trey's probably the best of the worst. He takes a lot more shots than those other guys. Norris Cole, Zach LaVine, Ronnie Price, and Elfrid Payton. And then Trey, they call them the bottom five guards. So of those bottom five, Trey's probably the best. His shooting is somewhere in the middle. And I pulled these up earlier today, so this doesn't have tonight's games, which is probably going to make all of his stats look a little better. But of all of them, he's the worst overall shooter, both two-point and three-point. But he, of those guys, he's the second in assists. And his assist-to-turnover ratio is the best. But then I look at their offense and defensive ratings. He's tied with Zach LaVine for his defensive rating. His offensive rating is a little better, but his offensive rating is behind Ronnie Price. So yeah, all those guys are bad, and Trey is probably overall the best of those guys. but that's about where he is. And I think we brought this up on a previous one where there's only maybe four other starting point guards in the NBA that trades better than. But
well, and
can't say he's in the top 20.
What kills me or what gets me, I guess, is, and I tried to spend a little time during the game tonight doing a little little research. You know, I talked to I jumped in on a conversation on Twitter and talked to Ben as well, and Ben talked about the defensive problems with Trey on the court, and I agree there's problems, and I agree that Exum is a better defender, you know, longer and more athletic and better at that defensive position. But right now I see some of the problems offensively might outweigh the defense that Trey is giving up. And the reason why I say that is I'm looking at how his offense affects the rest of the floor, and the spacing's not good. When he's not shooting the ball well, then it allows any one of the defenders that are manning up against him to drop back into passing lanes. You know, we're not going to see Burks for the rest of the year, but I noticed in quite a few games when Trey just wasn't shooting the ball well, Alec Burks had a lot harder time getting to the rim. And part of that is that the guy guarding Trey would get into his lane and cut off. He'd slack off into the lane. He wouldn't go all the way over and double, but he would be able to slack off because he knew he wouldn't have to guard Trey. And then Alec would have to back it out. He wouldn't have anywhere to go. And it provides a spacing problem. I just don't get it with Trey though. When I look at his shot chart, it's erratic. I can't tell where the problem is. And I did this with Alec last week. I think I'm going to do it with Trey again, and I'm going to start watching film of his shot. I just want to see where the problem is, because it really is erratic. Like, I can't tell where the disconnect or problem is for a shot.
Yeah, and you know what? When you compare Trey last year and this year, his numbers are almost identical, which is kind of amazing. I thought we'd see more of a jump in year two. But he's almost exactly the same player, except he's shooting worse. His minutes are almost exactly the same. His field goal attempts are almost exactly the same. His free throw attempts are almost exactly the same. He averaged last year making 1.5 free throws a game. He's doing the same thing this year. His rebounding is down. He was averaging 3 a game last year. Now he's at 2.4, which that's fine. But like, his assists have dipped a little bit. He was 5.7 last year. Now he's 5.1. His steals have gone up a bit from 0.6 to 0.9. And his points, he was 12.8 last year. Now he's 11.7. And, you know, and this is before the Minnesota game, which I bet ticks a lot of these up a tenth of a percent. But, you know, that's not encouraging to see that. And his offense and defensive rating are very similar. His defensive rating was 115 last year, but the Jazz were the worst defense in the NBA last year. Now he's at 114. But his offensive rating, he was 101 last year. Now he's at 98. His per, he was 12.6 last year. Now he's 11.4. You know, these aren't encouraging trends, and I would love to take the Minnesota game as a springboard, but I kind of had that same feeling from the first Minnesota game. So as I look at the season overall, we have seen more of the Trey from Atlanta than we are the Trey from Minnesota. When we play bad teams, we can look great. But if this team is going to get better, then they need him to play good against average teams, if not good teams.
Yeah, I agree. The other thing that intrigues me probably about his shots, and you're right, and I was thinking about that before we came to that. It, you know, Minnesota, and he's played well against Minnesota twice, which is all indications are it's Minnesota. They're just not very good. And that position's not very good for them. And you and I did talk about this on an earlier show where Trey's numbers aren't very good when going up against some of the better backcourts in the NBA. I mean, you mentioned you went down that list about everybody that he's gone up against and where the struggles have been. But like I said, from a shot situation where he's just not making shots, sometimes that isn't so much the defender as it is in just Trey's erratic shooting. And I was looking at the numbers that NBA Stats throws out there, trying to figure out, is it somewhere in the shot clock that he's taking it that's not turning out very well? Is it, you know, defenders on him? Is it defenders away from him? Where is the best at? And I'm going to have to look further at it. And I'm, let's put it this way. I'm feeling a post coming on, something that I'm going to write about, because I can't figure it out, John. I can't. You know, the other aspects of his offense, his assists and things like that, you would hope would be better than they are. But the shooting, if he could even be a more consistent shooter, that helps the Jazz offense immensely.
Yeah, if he could just shoot what he was shooting his rookie year.
Yeah.
Which wasn't great, but now I'd love to get that 38%. 33% from three back.
Right.
If he could just do that, then that would help. I think it's a difference in games, really, if he could just be a better shooter. And now that we don't have Alec Burks for the year, we don't have Rodney Hood for a bit. Did they even announce how much longer they think he'll be out?
I don't think so. I didn't see how long.
I can't remember if I've seen or heard anything. But it's going to be a challenge to space the floor now. If Trey can just get a little bit better at that, because there are other guys who do that too. Like when Joe Ingles is on the floor, they know that they don't have to play on him because he's gonna look to pass.
Right.
His shooting was pretty bad early in the season, and now he rarely attempts shots himself. He had a contested layup, and he passed it way out to 3-point line, and it got stolen, and he had a turnover. It's just like, man, just shoot the contested layup.
Well, and I'm
he got up in the air and he threw it away. Fortunately, the Favors got the steal on the other end, so it didn't ultimately matter. But
and I'm curious, looking to just his catch and shoot numbers this year, he. Looking at his catch and shoot versus his pull-ups or less than 10 feet, he shoots the ball. His field goal percentage is better on catch and shoots than it is anywhere else on the floor. Mm. So, and that's at 36%. He takes it at a 36% frequency. Okay. So my bad. Other than layups, I guess less than 10 feet, he's at 38%. He shoots 35% on catch and shoots, but his frequency is the most on the catch and shoot. So he's shooting 36% of the time from catch and shoot. So, and then, I mean, these are the numbers I was looking at earlier during the game. I mean, and then I go down to where it says shot clock usage. His best percentage wise, like that he shoots, is right in that, that 15 to 20 second range left on the shot clock. So he's really good at shooting. If I'm reading these numbers right, he's really good at shooting early on in the shot clock. I mean, his usage rate his frequency at shooting is right in that 15 to 7 second area. He shoots 46% of the time there, but he hits 60% when he shoots. His field goal percentage is 60% when it's in the first 5 seconds of the shot clock. And then when he gets in that 22 to 15 range, he's shooting right around 40 to 43%. So it's early on in the shot clock, he shoots well. But then when you go down, he doesn't shoot well late, you know, or any later, you know, it starts dropping off the later it goes. But again, it's so erratic, so I don't know. I'm just curious, if he's shooting well early on in the shot clock, I'm wondering if maybe there's more pressure as time is winding down because is the point. I don't know. I can't.
He shoots rare enough that I'm wary of really getting into his numbers because of the small sample size.
No, that's true. So I don't know. I might look at it a little bit more on my own time, just because I'm curious. But he's a hard one to read. So, so I wanted to mention to kind of look at a few numbers though, aside from Trey, just for the folks listening, and I don't know if you've looked at this. The Jazz have won 6 of their last 9.
Yep.
Their two key wins in that stretch was on the road at Miami, on the road at Memphis. They're 4-2 on the road during that stretch. That's pretty good. And during that stretch of 9 games, they are allowing 92 points per game. That's pretty good defense, too, during that stretch. Now, granted, when I go back and look at the games they've played, what, 2 Minnesota games, one against a very poor offensive team in Philly. And then the most points they allowed were 104 against Charlotte and 101 against the Clippers. So other than that, they've allowed 87, 94, 104, 91, 71, 101, 94, 98, and 99, 89 respectively during that stretch. Their defense has definitely been better. I mean, just from watching the games, you can tell that it would seem that Quinn has maybe gotten into him a little bit, that it seems like their defense has been much better in stretches. And actually, during those stretches, I think the fourth quarter has been their best defensive quarter of the game.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, the month of December, they had the 25th in defense. But they had some bad losses early in the month. I bet if we just kind of looked at the last 2 weeks.
Since that Miami game.
That would be a lot better. Yeah. From Miami on. And that's the thing. I think I'm emotional about Trey's bad night in Atlanta with Atlanta, because they could have won that game. That game was so winnable.
Yeah.
They only lost by 6, and if other guys had been shooting instead of Trey, I feel like they could have won that game. That's what was so frustrating about him shooting 0-11 from 3.
I also wonder how much Alec Burks would have made a difference in that game against Atlanta too.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean Alex, I mean he's our, I don't know where we'd put him. He's probably our 3rd best player, 4th best player, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Especially when he's on it, and he was kind of having an uneven year anyway. But Alec was one where I feel like he gets better as the season goes on. I thought that he would have a really strong second half to the season. Now we just won't know. He's a crucial piece.
I also think he's the 2nd best player in crunch time. I think when I went and looked at 82games.com, I even went and looked at his usage stats along with Hayward's stats down the stretch during the last 2 weeks. The anomaly being the Orlando game, because the Jazz outscored Orlando in that game, but really weren't good defensively in that fourth quarter and then that game. But with that game set aside, Alec Burks and Gordon Hayward have led the team in the fourth quarter in just about every other one of those games. You go to that Memphis game, Alec Burks had 13 points in the fourth quarter, Hayward had 9. So that's where I think last night against Atlanta, it probably would have been huge with Alec in the fourth quarter too, because I think Alec spells Hayward a little bit in the fourth quarter and takes a load off of Hayward. And when you've got two guys that are that good in crunch time, then the other team, the defensive looks that they give the Jazz are different.
Yeah, and Hayward, he's our most consistent player overall, but when he wasn't very good tonight.
No.
So it was great that Trey went off. There are nights when it just really helps if someone else can have a great night. When Hayward's having a bad night. I mean, he's scored 30 points in losses this year. So if he's shooting 4 of 13, then it's great if someone else can step up. And sometimes it's been Cantor's had some good games offensively this year, or Favors or whoever. But you know, if he's having an off night, then it's really nice to know someone else can step up. And now that Alec's no longer an option for that, your cast of nominees shrinks
big time.
Favors is capable of having that, but he was 15-8 tonight, and that's pretty much what Favors is this year. He's a 15-8 guy. And he's one where I expect that he gets better every year. We've never had a jump from year to year. It's been gradual each year, but each year it is better. And I expect to see the same thing next year. I expect next year he's going to be more like a 17-9 guy.
Right.
And then we can actually start thinking about trying to get back in the playoffs. And you know what's hilarious about the Jazz? I mean, they are in a great spot right now. They've won 6 of the last 9. If they were in the East, we'd be talking about how playoffs are still a possibility. They're only 3 games out of the playoffs in the East.
Right.
Oh, actually, I think it's 2.5 now. They think they're 2.5 out of this win, which is just so sad. But every Monday morning, I look around, and if the Jazz are in the bottom 7, I'll do my tank watch. And I haven't looked at the Sunday games, but right now, Jazz are 8th.
Hmm.
So,
well, and their schedule coming up is brutal. The next, they've got at home against Indy. Then they go at Chicago, at OKC, at Houston, and then if you go out an extended period of time, their next game after Houston is Golden State. That's not a very pretty schedule coming up for them.
Yeah, they have the Pacers at home, so that's quite winnable.
But that three game road trips
have all their guys back. So yeah, but those three road games. I'd be very impressed if they don't go 0-3.
Yeah. So you're going to want to keep that tank watch on the front burner for a little while.
Yeah. It might not happen this week, but next week I'm sure it'll make a return.
All right. So going forward here, we're looking forward. We've talked about those. Do we have enough time? Do you want to talk about the news that broke out today?
Yeah, that they're signing Elijah Millsap.
Yep.
Which is really interesting. And you know what's funny is with tonight's game, I don't know if we really need him because Jeremy Evans is finally getting minutes and he's shown that he can play minutes. So I don't know how much we need Elijah Millsap. And I kind of took it as more of a goodwill gesture to maybe have Paul Millsap consider us when he's a free agent this summer.
Yeah.
I took it as a long game nod.
Well, and it's funny. Last night, Spencer Wixom, Jazz Jargon on Twitter, put out a post talking about some of the options that the Jazz had to bring up to replace because, you know, Hood out, you know, they had Burks out. They're really thin at that guard position. He talked about a few of them. One of the options he had on his list that was intriguing to me was Lamb. Former Kentucky, was it Kentucky or Connecticut? Gosh, I'd have to go back and look at his post again. I can't remember, but this guy, and I'm drawing a blank on where he played, but this was a guy that Gordon was intrigued. Lamb? Is that who it was?
Oh my God.
Yeah, but he's one that was intriguing to me because I haven't watched him in college. He's a fairly dynamic shooter and would be a nice piece to add for the Jazz. But then they go out and they pick up, you know, Elijah today. And then what's even funnier is I reading on Twitter and a couple other people, Andy Bailey was one of them, mentioned that he was interested to see Seth Curry, Steph's younger brother, as an option for the Jazz. But when I talked to Spencer about it, Spencer thought that Elijah's a good fit for the Jazz. May not be the best option, but he's probably the best fit for what the Jazz want. And I watched a few highlights on him. I actually agree with him. I think, you know, he's not a great shooter. I think he shoots about 35. I think the numbers that Spencer put out is he shoots about 35% from three, but he is smart with the ball. He takes care of the ball. He protects it. He's got a nice first step. I wouldn't say wicked quick, but he's got a good first step. And he's very good around the basket. Hesitation moves. He's got a few pump fakes, a few things that get defenders in the air. Kind of reminds me of Paul Riley in some of the ways that he plays. So I don't think it's a bad fit for the Jazz. I don't know how much time he's going to get. I would imagine if we continue to suffer from an injury bug, we might see him play a little bit.
Well, what's his position? Is he more of a small forward or is he?
I want to say he's a two. I want to say he's a two guard. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I thought he was about the same height as Paul.
He might be.
Two guard, that's interesting. I was thinking he was a forward, but if he's a two guard.
And I'd have to go back and look. I don't know. I don't remember. Oh, he's a shooting guard. Devin's showing me the info right now. He's 6'6", 215, so he's a two guard. 27 years old, so there goes the youth movement.
Wow. So is Joe Ingles. We just need guys who need bodies.
Yeah, that's true.
Here we are in a good little spot in our... Oh, yeah, there it is. He's a 2-3.
Yeah.
Your sealed jam.
But he's got some impressive moves. He's got a plethora of little hesitations and spin moves down low that get guys in the air, and he gets to the basket really easily. And like I said, he's got a first step that is fairly decent coming off of the 3-point line. A few of the NBA D League recaps highlights that I saw, he was a pretty impressive to watch. So.
He's in Bucks summer camp or training camp and then got waived mid-October.
Yeah. So, but like you said, it's a body. Jazz need bodies right now. And they just do. They just need bodies. Let's just hope we don't see any more injuries the rest of the year. So. All right.
If he's coming over, then I'm hoping his shooting can translate. I'm a little discouraged by that 35% from three.
Yeah.
But, yeah, maybe he has enough of the other intangibles that's just fine until Rodney Hood can come back.
Right.
What do you think of Ian Clark's play?
Ian Clark looked pretty good tonight.
Yeah.
Didn't he hit a couple of those corner threes, didn't he?
Yeah, Ian Clark, he's actually put up good numbers when he's able to play. I mean, he hit all of his 3-point shots. He had 9 points. So he's an option that they've had. He's another guy in his second year.
Yeah.
Got to see Torrey Murray, but not really, but at least he can now say that he's played a minute as a Jazz man.
what about Jeremy Evans tonight? We haven't seen much of him all year long. Yeah, he looked awesome.
That's one thing about Jeremy is there's something about Jeremy's play that he has not been able to crack Quinn's rotation. I mean, he was a regular in Ty's rotation last year.
Yep.
And he's not been able to crack this one, well, mostly because we have Booker, but whenever he's had the chance, it's looked pretty good outside of the first couple games where I only got like 3 minutes. But I was very encouraged by the fact that he hasn't played for a couple weeks. He gets in there and he makes the most of it right away. I mean, he had 9 points, 2 rebounds, 2 blocks. I mean, it was great it was exactly what we needed from him.
Yeah, well, we got the energy out of Jeremy that Jeremy's good at giving. That's the part I like.
He had a 3-point shot. I don't remember that being part of his arsenal.
Yeah.
There it was.
Jeremy for three. I hope that becomes a new you know, a new thing to talk about. It seems like he's extended his shooting range out every year because after the first year, nobody thought he was going to be able to really be a consistent shooter from anything beyond the inside of the paint. And then last year in Ty's rotation, he was hitting that mid-range 18-footer fairly consistently.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's just, but like you said, it's nice to see him come out after sitting for so long, come out, plays well as if he had never left the rotation to begin with. He looked good. So.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got tonight?
I actually need to get going.
All right.
So let's call it on this one and hope that they're able to get that one against Indiana before the schedule really gets tough again.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for listening to another week of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz with John English and the Jedi, Alan Zog. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.